Yeah, last week we left off on the topic of marriage. This year it's children. Now, before we jump in, I have my favorite and God's favorite candy up here. It's the chocolate peanut M&M. And this jar, you can kind of see the size of it right here. And I want you to just take a guess how many chocolate peanut M&Ms you think is in here. Okay, just like get in your mind, think how many there is right here. Everybody do it. Because in a minute you're going to turn to the person next to you and see who's closer. How many chocolate peanut M's do you think is in here? So here comes the number right here. 936 chocolate peanut M's. Well, turn to the person next to you, find out. Say hello. Nice to be at church with you today. How many numbers did you think was in there? There was 936 of these right here. Now, why is that significant? 936. 935. Chocolate peanut M&Ms. Why is that significant? Each of these M&Ms represent 1 week that you have with your children to parent them. From the time they're born to the time they become adults, 18 years old, which is usually when you parent. We're always parents, but we're not always parenting. 936 weeks. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What does parenting look like? So grab your note sheet, if you would. And at the very top, here's a big idea. Parenting is a relationship, not a job. Here's what the Bible says about that. Children are a blessing and a gift from the Lord. And so now, as you look at this, different levels go on. Some people are at this top level right here. They're in the baby section. So they have the little babies that are so cute, and they've been waiting for it, and finally the baby arrives. But if you think about little babies, you have to change their diapers, you have to feed them, you have to bathe them. They can't do anything for themselves. They're so self-centered. They don't get what they want. They start to cry. You're up all night. You never sleep. I mean, it's cute, but the baby phase, the baby level, can be a lot of work and can seem like a pretty big job. I remember back, you're thinking to yourself, man, if we could just get past this baby phase, you know, and into the toddler phase, which is the next section. In the toddler phase, they're so cute in the toddler phase. You're like, finally, you know, they can kind of like engage with me and be with me. But in the toddler, you're still wiping their butt, and you're still helping them blow their nose, and you're still feeding them, and they're still getting up, and you're still bathing them, and they're like everywhere running through the house. You're trying to make sure they don't electrocute themselves. The toddler phase can be a lot of work. When you're in the toddler phase, it's really natural to say, I cannot wait until these kids get into school so I can finally get a break. And so like the middle section, that's the elementary time. And you think, now that's when finally, you know, I'm at least get a shower every day. You know, they run off to elementary school. Then you find out, well, now I'm their personal chauffeur and their friend's chauffeur. And I have to help them with their homework every night. And I have to deal with their emotions as their personalities start to evolve and their friends. And, you know, you go through the elementary stage and you find out that's a lot of work. Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, everything that's going on. Now they actually can have bad hair days and they're upset about it. I mean, it's a lot. It could seem like a big job at the elementary stage. You're thinking, man, if we could just get these kids to the place where they're in high school and they're driving themselves around, you know. And then they get into high school, and that's when you discover, you know, that, oh, now the hormones are raging. And they're expensive in high school. I mean, they care about what they wear when they get to high school. And they think money grows on trees or something. They have no idea how expensive that they are. And you have to constantly monitor them. And they have phones. And when they get into high school, it can seem like a lot of work and a big job. And parenting all through the different phases can seem like a big job. It can seem like this is a lot of work. It doesn't feel like a blessing, a gift from God, when it feels like so much work. It's an awful lot of labor. Now, wherever you are in the phases, one of the things that steals the most important thing is when it just feels like my kids are a job. It's one task after another. And it pushes out the best part, what it is to have a relationship with our children. There's this a clip I want you to see. It kind of shows the tension that happens. And so check this out.
Shouldn't we have gotten like an update by now?
Yeah,
Apparently, MRIs take quite a while. At least the coffee's cold. Mom, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about Berkeley. It's just, you know, if I don't get in, I think it'll crush me. But I just could not deal with disappointing you on top of that.
Buck, for the record, I would be disappointed for you, not for me.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's hard to feel the difference.
Just a closed steel door. And even if you could get through, there was a room full of spikes right behind it. And I always wanted to have a daughter because I wanted to do it a different way. I wanted to be the mom that had her arms wide open, just waiting for you to fall in if you needed it. And somehow, no, we just never got there, did we?
Mom.
No. Nope. It's not your job to make me feel better. It's not. It's my job. It's my job to keep standing there with my arms wide open, waiting for you to maybe someday fall inside if you needed it. And if you do, I'll love you. And if you don't, I love you too. Because that's what it means to be a parent. You'll see it one day.
Yeah, that's a good picture of the tension. You know, all through the different phases, the task of it, the effort of it. And it sort of moves the relationship to the side, and it just, if you have more than one kid, it feels like you have more than one job. I've got 5 jobs or 4 jobs and 6 schedules to keep track of, and I'm funding these little companies, and the relationship gets blurry, and then you come back to it and you realize, well, wait a minute, that isn't what I want. And it's this tension that we all go through. Maybe you're experiencing it. You understand. It's like, I didn't mean for this to just feel like one big task after another. How is it that I don't feel close and where I want to with my kids? And some of it is, like the video says, the baggage that we bring in. I mean, think about it. By the time you become a parent or I become a parent, it's not like we step into it with a completely clean slate. We've been parented. We all arrive with our own baggage that we have arrived with our own parents or step-parents, and we've seen our friends' parents, and we have TV parents that we've watched, and you know, siblings that tried to parent us, and all of a sudden we arrive in, we have our first child, and we have our own baggage with us that we bring into the parenting process. You know, when is the last time you might have done something and you stopped and said to yourself, that's exactly what my dad used to say to me? Or that's how my mom used to treat me. You know, and you said to yourself, I'm never going to be like that. And then all of a sudden it's you know, somehow it got played forward, the baggage. And I remember when I had kids, I looked into my own family line and thought, how am I going to do this? You know, how am I going to make sure that I don't contaminate them with all the, you know, the stuff that happened in my family? Here's God's promise, and it's in your notes. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. That when we move forward into the parenting process, good things can happen. We had a good thing happen this last week. I became a grandpa for the first time, and I brought you a picture that you could see it, and that's my grandson, Lewis, and he looks so cute there, but he won't always stay that way, I know. And as I was holding him, I'm thinking about the family line coming down and, you know, what baggage did I put into my son and what baggage is he going to deal with into his son? And it's a process that keeps going on. We all volunteer for it. We keep expanding our families. And you're a part of a family line. I'm a part of a family line. And God sees all that and he says, before you freak out and think that you're going to ruin the whole thing, whatever baggage you bring into, and we bring good things and not so good, awesome things from our folks and things that we've seen, stuff not so awesome. And God says he can use it all. No matter what has ever happened in your family or mine, God can use anything that we categorize as bad and turn it into something good when it comes to family. That's the promise. That's our hope as Christ followers. If you're not following Jesus, you haven't stepped over that line, that's part of his invitation. Maybe you've tried to deal with your family stuff on your own. I don't care about my family. I tried to fix my family. Part of his invitation is to say, come be a part of my family, and I'll help you deal with yours. And I want to look at some questions today, practical ones to do with parenting. How do we stay focused on relationships? So grab your note sheet. Number one, how do I balance acceptance and correction? So these are the things we all deal with. This is where it can go off track. This is where I can get super focused on not the relationship, acceptance and correction. And one of the things that I've seen in my family is that sometimes I get confused with acceptance and preference. I have my own personal preferences, and I try to correct my kids based on what I prefer. We have different preferences when it comes to music, my children and I, when it comes to movies and movie stars and sports stars. And we like even friends and people that we like to hang out with. My children and I prefer different things, and that's okay. I remember years ago, I was a youth leader working as a youth pastor in a church, and we had hundreds of kids coming to these youth events that we were doing, and about half of them weren't following Jesus and half were, and it was awkward for our church at that time because there was all these kids coming around that were, you know, we had skating, and we did these crazy big games for them, and all these kids were coming, many of them becoming Christ followers, but there was this kind of mixture of stuff going on, you know, and we played all kinds of music, too. We played music for them to come and listen. We picked the stuff they liked. And it was just at the time that rap music was starting to emerge and become popular. And so we were playing rap music. And we'd have sometimes families, parents come from the church and say, you got to stop playing that rap music. I mean, you know, that rap music is of the devil. And I'd be like, no, it's not. You just don't like it. Just like your parents didn't like your music. And their parents didn't like their music. You prefer different music than these kids. And I understand. They'd say, well, have you listened to the lyrics on that stuff? And I'd say, well, in that day, what's on your iPod? Well, I listen to the Rolling Stones. Have you listened to their lyrics? Write those out and take them to your child and say, here's the code I want you to live by. Probably not. But you prefer it, so it's okay. Everybody in my family, my wife and my children, they all love Chinese food. I hate it. They just love it. They think it's the greatest thing ever to go out to Chinese, and I hate Chinese food. But that doesn't make Chinese food bad. They're not bad people because they like it. Weird, but not bad, but... You know, it wouldn't be fair for me to make them feel bad or try to correct them because of my preference. But as I look back as a parent, I think sometimes I have. I've had some preferences that had nothing to do with other than what I liked. And I tried to course correct my kids based on my preferences. And you know what it did? It drove a wedge between us and created distance. Because it's okay to like Chinese food. And it's okay that I don't like Chinese food. You don't have to correct that. That's why what you use for correction in families is values. If you're taking notes, write that as big as you can on your piece of paper. Values are something that we can share. Values are relational. When you establish values in your family and you're course correcting based on values, it has nothing to do with preference. Acceptance can get past what we prefer. It has nothing to do with correction. Values do. When you're a family and you start to establish values, you know, it's not okay to hit your brother in the face with a toy. It's a value. When you establish values in your family that you talk about and you dialogue about and you discuss why as a family we believe in this, these are what we hold as important. These are things that we believe matter. Everybody can share in those. And is there tension? Well, sure there is. There has to be discussions, and you have to work through things, and there's times you go through that cause you to be very close when people just decide, I'm not keeping the values, and how do you correct people? But it's relational. Values are completely different than preferences. Do you know what your families are? Our family, I'll give you just a couple, we value generosity in our family. My wife's very generous, and she's helped me to become generous, but we see God as a generous God. So we've wanted to be like Him. And so in our family, money is not a touchy topic. I know a lot of families it is. It's like, hey man, that's personal. In our family, it's not, it's familial. We can easily talk about money in our family. I know what they make, they know what I make. We talk about how much something costs. It's not embarrassing in our family to say, how much did you spend on that? You know why? Because we have always tied generosity to our money ever since the kids were little. We give money away. We support things that other people would think is crazy. Why would you spend your money that way? Because we value generosity. We tithe. We give money to God. They do. My point is, I know generosity is a value in my family. I know faithfulness is a value. I saw families tore up through adultery. I saw it in my family. I saw it in my friend's family. I was like, God, I admit I'm not strong enough, but can you help me with this one? So He taught me about boundaries, how to be with women and how to act and how to be. And my kids and I started talking about that young. I know we value faithfulness. See, values are not preferences. They're not personal. They have nothing to do with my personality. They're things that we have decided that we hold dear. There was a little girl that had gotten in trouble. Her mom had told her to quit playing with the toys, and she played with the toys, and her mother finally said to her, come over here. And she took a chair, and she put it in the corner. She said, come over here and sit in this chair. And this little girl, you know, she's like a kindergartner. She goes over, and she just stands in front of the chair. And her mom looks at her and says, I said sit down in that chair. And the little girl just looked at her like this, and she wouldn't sit down. And her mom marched over and she said, listen, I'm the boss and you are going to sit in this chair. So the little girl sat in the chair and folded her arms. And her mom went around the house doing some stuff. And she came back quite a while later. And when she came back, the little girl was sitting in the chair with her arms crossed. And she had this huge smile on her face. And her mom said, what are you smiling about? And she said, I'm standing on the inside. And I thought, oh, man, hope you didn't get one of those as a child. We're all one of those. We're all one. And do you know if you mix up your preferences with a correction, they'll just stand on the inside. They'll sneak. They won't include you. You won't be anywhere near what they're going through because you will have imposed on them a preference that is not a value. So the first one is, when it comes to relational stuff, work in values, accept preferences. Number two, write this in your notes. How do I let them make their own choices and protect them? So that's a huge tension. You know, how do I let them make their own choices? But then as I watch them make their own choices, it feels like they're going to hurt themselves. Maybe you have seen one of these right here. It's one of the Tide Pods. And by now, everybody's heard about the Tide Pod Challenge. You know, and I don't want to get into the politics and the morals and all of it and any of that kind of stuff. It's not my point today. But what my point is that this ended up being... These have always been a problem for little children, by the way. Soap has always looked tasty to babies. I don't know why. Little kids always want to eat soap bars and soap pods and drink soap, and it's always been a problem. But the new one was much, much different. It was teenagers and even college kids were eating these things. And these are like... These can be like lethal. It started in a slow burn, like somebody had a challenge and it got onto YouTube. And let me read you what one researcher said. It's been on the news. Teens are eating Tide detergent pods, despite the fact that eating them can be lethal. They film themselves doing it. It's the Tide Pod Challenge. It's not like they don't know it can be dangerous. Besides the fact, it's common knowledge that detergent isn't food. There's been a lot of media coverage about the dangers of toddlers getting into them, about how Tide Pods are not just poisonous, but possibly fatal. Media coverage is part of the problem, more specifically social media. Back when I was a teenager, the author writes, a group of friends watching and egging me on was relatively small, and most of them were people I'd chosen to be friends with, and at least some of them had some interest in my well-being. Not so anymore. The influence is much wider. And the people who are influencing your kids don't even know them. Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. These are all factors we have to deal with. That's the new thing going on with parenting. As we try to protect them, and as they make their own choices. And you can just say, I'm the boss, and tell them they're going to sit in that chair. But they'll just sneak around you and find ways to fool you and trick you, and you'll always be having to be on the hunt. How do I stay involved? Let me give you an idea and write this in your notes. Ask questions. If you want to be with your kids in a way that protects them and still gives them opportunity to make their own choices, ask questions. Now, I know you might be thinking, well, how do you ask a toddler question or something like that? Of course, you know, when they've got a fork and they're running towards the electric socket, you don't have a chance to, you know, ask questions. You just grab them and protect them. I understand that. But you can even ask questions at that age. After you stopped them from barbecuing themselves, you can ask, do you remember what Daddy said about the light sockets? I think everybody should keep a piece of dried, burnt bacon in the refrigerator. And then the first time they run over it, just tell them, say, do you want to look like this? And then the next time they go over, stop them and then go get it and then start the question. Say, do you remember that you could look like this? Do you remember what Daddy said about pain? You know, you can start the dialogue even when they're really little. It doesn't just have to be, I said stop. Questions. When you ask people questions and you listen, you find out what they're thinking. What's their angle on life? Why would they want to do that? You know, if you could stop and ask somebody, say, like, I know that you know this isn't good for you to eat. Tell me, what are some of the pressures? Like, what's the payoff of eating this? You know, just don't make the assumption, are you an idiot? You're acting just like your mom's uncle. He's like, no. He's like, find ways to engage. And by the way, there's always a Tide Pod challenge at every level, every generation. There's always challenges. There's always things that as parents we look and go, that is so stupid. And that's what your parents said and their parents and their parents. We're always doing something that's challenging, and we're doing it because we want to. And if you ask questions, if you can dialogue and try to get into where are you going with this? Why do you want to do this? Let's talk. And here's the really cool thing. If you ask questions and you can dialogue, sometimes you can get to a place where they'll make a decision and you'll know they've been influenced by you, but they think it's their decision and they own it. And that's how they grow. For the rest of their life, they can't be calling you for everything. At some point, they have to process the input and make their choice. See? And the best way to do that is just ask them some questions and try to create dialogue with them and be with them in a way that allows them to make their choices and you're with them, but you've been questioning the choices that they're making. Now, the third thing, and write this down, how do I give them room to grow and provide guidance? And this is kind of like the last one, but it's a little bit different. It's the story about the guy that hired a guide, and they went through the jungle, and they went over the mountains, and they got through the rivers, and he's just so sure, like, whoa, this guy's taking me everywhere. I'm sure glad he knows where he's going. There's a lost city they're trying to get to down in South America, and he begins to trust this guy as he goes, and then he finally gets through this jungle, and he comes right down a path, and when he gets there, he looks out into it, and it's a desert as far as you can see. And he looks at the guide like, what the heck? And he says to the guide, where's the road? And the guide said, I'm the road. And at that point, he could trust him. And that's what it's like to go through the different phases. See, we're not hoping that our kids just do what we say. The goal is trust. That when they have to risk it with us. And sometimes you have to ask your children to trust you. They're not going to get it, and they're not going to want to do it. And you're going to have to have trust in the bank to make a withdrawal. You're going to have to be able to go to them and say, listen, there's some things I don't think you can see. And I don't seem to be able to explain it to you. And that's probably on me. I'm asking you to trust me on this one. Don't take this job. Don't date that guy. Don't get in that car. Don't go to that college. I understand everything is pointing that you want to. I'm asking you to trust me. And that's a process. When you get to the place where there's no road and they can't see the road, and you say to them, I'm the road, there has got to be trust established. How would your life change with your children if it wasn't just trying to get them to behave or stay out of trouble, but you were trying to build trust? You know who else is trying to do that? God, with us. Because he said, I am the way. Can he tell you something and when nothing, not a bit of it seems right? Can he say, trust me, I am the road. Look what Eugene Peterson says here. It's really neat. He's an author. God's great love and purpose for us are worked out in the messes of our kitchens and backyards, in storms and sins, blue skies, daily work, working with us as we are, not as we should be, and where we are, not where we'd like to be, all through the process. Now, let me just give you a tip, parenting tip from my life. This is something I've learned, and it's been super handy. I think I learned this more from Clarice, but I've definitely adopted it. When you tell your kids something and you're wrong, go back and admit it and let them know that you were wrong. Or when you say, trust me, they're going to say, you were wrong last time. See, it's really okay in relationships to be wrong. It's not okay to pretend you weren't. And we get this idea that we're the parents and they can never know that I'm wrong, or I can never admit it, or I can never feel weak. Nothing could be more BS. You have at times go to your folks. I was thinking of one recently. There was this sports star that my oldest son really liked. He was all a gangster guy, and he was the kind of guy I didn't want him to like. It was kind of a preference thing, but there was somewhat of a role model thing in there. I just didn't like this guy, and I kind of pressured him. Why do you like that guy? That guy sucks, and all this stuff. You know, he still liked him like all kids do. And so, you know, and later, I found out a bunch of inside information on that sports star. I watched some interviews, did some reading. And maybe you pop off once in a while to your kids too, and then later you find out, whoop, I was misinformed. And I had to go back to him and say, you know what, I was wrong about that guy. I think I like him too. I had to be willing to go back and admit that I was wrong. You see, I can be a guide if I'm an honest guide. And when I make a mistake, I can put it out there and say, listen, I was wrong on that one. And you know it's never too late to go back, as long as they're alive. It could be 10 or 15 years, you may go back and say, you know, I was wrong about him. He turned out to be a great husband. I was just scared. I had my own baggage. I shouldn't have reacted that way. Will you forgive me because I was wrong? My judgment was incorrect that time. Is there anything going on in your life? And take it a little further up the ladder to your, up the tree to your folks. Anything you need to go back and say to them? Say, you know what? I was wrong about that. Because when you're building trust, being humble and admitting your mistakes is just as important as being accurate and getting it right. Because it's relational. I can trust somebody that can humble themselves and come to me and say, listen, my bad, I was way off on that one. I'm sorry. And if I caused something for you, let's talk about it. I can build trust with that person. But when I watch someone do something wrong and they won't even admit it and they smugly walk around like they did nothing wrong or they said nothing wrong, I'm backing up from that person. I'm like, And see, we can miss it with our children and forget that the goal is trust, not accuracy. We don't get to be the guide because we're always right. We get to be the guide because we're as good as we can be. Which leads us to the next thing, and this is the last one. What am I doing to support their relationship with Jesus? And if you're not a Christ follower today, you sort of get to be off the hook on this one. I mean, maybe you can pick a few things out of it, but this is definitely for the people that are Christ followers. And I know that kind of what I want to say here is that I know there's this attitude out there, and just be patient with me as I talk through it, that we kind of need to be hands-off when our kids, when it comes to God. I hear this all the time from people. I'm not going to force it on them. You know, I'm not going to make them. I'm going to be hands-off when it comes to my children's relationship with it. When it comes to this whole God and Jesus thing and church thing, I'm going to be hands-off with them. I'm going to let them make up their own mind. It's so crazy. And they don't mind their kids getting a pet rattlesnake and bringing it home, but they're going to let them make up their own mind about God. And I understand the problem, baggage. I got forced to go to church. Someone forced it on me. Someone told me what I had to believe about God, and now I'm not going to do that to my kids. And I understand that. But I also would like you to consider that what your children believe about God might be the most important thing about them. And they need you. If you're a Christ follower, there is a way to do it that's not heavy-handed, that gives them room to make up their own mind, which they're going to do anyways. But you can be with them. Here's what it looked like for me. I talked openly about Jesus with my children. And when I made decisions about life, I let them know that he was involved. Not heavy-handed. I wasn't embarrassed to tell my sons as they're growing up. I prayed about that. I felt like God said this to me. I just put that out there. And you know, I didn't try to force them or tell them this is the way you had to live. And as I look back at times, I wish I would have maybe been a little less. But it was out there with them. I told my kids the reasons I made decisions from time to time had to do with Jesus. I said to him many times, the reason I'm choosing to do this is because my relationship with Jesus matters to me. It's the most important relationship. And the choice I'm making, the way you see me living, I'm doing this because I'm trying to follow Christ. Especially to the guys in here, I know it may not always seem like this, but they're watching you. They're going to pick up ideas from you. It's the old saying, the little girl that said to her daddy, Daddy, walk a little clearer. I'm having trouble listening. They're watching your walk with God and how you act with God. And it's extremely hard in some families. One person really wants to be with Jesus, and maybe not everybody does. I mean, it's a struggle. I understand. All I'm saying is that it doesn't have to be hands-off. Be hands-on. Listen to what the Bible says and encourages us. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be your hearts. You must teach them to your children and talk about them when you're at home or out on a walk, at bedtime and first thing in the morning. It's just saying, be hands-on. And one of the things I did with my children and still do, I didn't want my kids to see me as a savior. And so I would try to be clear with them. I tried to say, even though I don't know that I always conveyed this the way I would have liked to have, but in my heart, I always wanted them to know, no matter what you ever go through, I'm here for you. I will always love you. But I also wanted to convey, I will not always be good, and I will not always know what's best. There is only one that can make that claim. And I think you should consider him and need him, because he's the only one that will always be good. And he's the only one that will always know what's best. It's not me. We're all on the same ground, sons. You'll have to decide about Jesus. Hands off says, go figure it out yourself. I wouldn't want to dare pressure you. I wouldn't want to pressure him either. But I don't want to be so hands off that I'm unhelpful or supportive, or they have the advantage of my walk with Jesus or the way that I'm with him. And you'll have to decide that, but I do want to leave you with this. What your children believe about God may be the most important thing about them. And you may not like it or want it, or you may relish the fact that it's there, but they're looking to you. Now the last thing, and it's the bottom line today. God is a good parent, not a taskmaster. And read what it says there. And because we are his children, God sent his spirit of his son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Abba, Father. So it all sort of comes back around to that as we're engaging, is to say, well, my parenting starts with how I see God as a parent for me. That he's my father. That I'm a part of his family. That I can go to him. And wouldn't it be amazing to be in a world where people saw God as someone that accepted them and corrected them? Where they had room to grow, but someone protected them? Where they could make their own choices, but someone guided them? Would it be awesome if people saw God that way? That happens when they see us. When they see people like us. East Lake Church was designed so people could see us and go, is that what God looks like? A father.